Dodgy as it sometimes seems, the business climate in the D.C. region is actually quite dynamic. Exhaustive research, commissioned by the local 2030 group, looked into capital, entrepreneurship, business formation, and mergers and acquisitions. It's produced some surprising findings released just yesterday. Report author Jonathan Aberman of Amplifier Ventures joins me with details. What did you mainly discover in doing this research?
Our region has a number of stories we keep telling ourselves. Some of the ones that are most prominent are, we're not entrepreneurial. I hear a lot, we're dependent on the federal government. Sometimes you hear, well, if only we had more venture capital, we'd be more innovative and entrepreneurial. And with the help of the 2030 group that commissioned this report, I was able to pull a great team together for the last 4 months to really look at the data around innovation and entrepreneurship. And what we learned, frankly, would be surprising if you think that reality is defined by the stories I just mentioned to you.
So what is the reality about the Washington, D.C. region?
The reality is we're intensely entrepreneurial. Our region has more new business formation than, say, Boston or Silicon Valley, and has had such since 2004. Our region over the last 20 years has had more rapidly growing businesses on the Inc. 500 list than any place in the United States. By a large margin, not a small margin, by a large margin. Our merger and acquisition market, we had 6,000 deals in the last 20 years where our companies were bought by others. We had 105 $1 billion or more exits. This is a region that is incredibly entrepreneurial, but it's not appreciated in some ways, and that's really what this report is about.
And how much does federal government buying and requirements drive what goes on here in terms of new companies and venture capital?
What we saw in the study, Tom, was that there is a particular model of entrepreneurship that we've defined as the Greater Washington model of entrepreneurship. It's where entrepreneurs take advantage of proximity to Washington, D.C., but not necessarily taking advantage of federal funding. So, for example, a company like AOL, America Online, grew up here because it was proximate to the internet backbone and took advantage of the internet protocols, which were invented by the federal government. Or a MedImmune, which is a dominant player in biotech. It was started by technology coming out of the federal government. But by the same token, you could look at a company like Cvent, which just exited for $1.6 billion, an event management business that benefited from being proximate to associations and trade groups and hotels. Or look at how many worldwide hotel companies are located here, like Hilton and others. It's not an accident. It's something that we see in our billion-dollar exits and we see in our entrepreneurial behavior. Proximity to D.C. is a great opportunity, and the smartest entrepreneurs take advantage of that.
So it could be also, besides the procurement that we tend to think about, but it's also the R&D spending and the grants that come from the federal government that are equal players in this ferment.
Absolutely. In fact, the R&D expenditures in this region are very large. 2013, the amount of funding was $26 billion in R&D. Our market is the largest market for R&D in the country. And what we don't really focus on enough is how much of that is in the hands of industry. We tend to focus on the universities because that's what happens in Silicon Valley and Boston. But here, most of the money goes into industries, government contractors, federal labs, and federally funded development corporations like MITRE and Johns Hopkins. Together, they get more than 90% of the money. And there's a lot of stuff that comes out of those labs that drives new industries. Look, telecommunications was driven by labs in this area. GPS was driven by labs in this area. Siri came out of DARPA, and I could go on. We have within our midst hotbeds of emerging technologies. Things like man-machine interface, robotics, precision medicine, for example, are all things that are being funded right now by agencies and are being deployed actively by entrepreneurs in our region.
Let's back up a moment. Tell us more about the 2030 group. Who is it and what is their goal here?
The 2030 group is a longstanding group of leaders in the community led by Bob Buchanan, who is a real estate developer and a community leader. And he believes very strongly that the way to make our economy grow is to think regionally, that we are greater than the sum of our parts, and that while it's great for regions to compete because, let's face it, competition makes everybody sharper, there are certain areas where coordination would make things better. And certainly, if you look at entrepreneurship and innovation, entrepreneurs really don't care where they locate. What they care is, are they located in an area where they can get the resources they want as efficiently as possible? Whether that's Virginia, Maryland, or D.C., they're largely agnostic. What they care about is, are there opportunities for them to get money, and are there opportunities for them to sell their businesses for nice premiums? And they look at that regionally. They compare this region to Silicon Valley on a regional basis, not on a Virginia, Maryland, D.C. basis. And that is really what the 2030 group is advocating in the work that they do, and I'm really pleased that they were willing to support this research as part of their innovation roadmap.
We're speaking with Jonathan Aberman, chairman of Amplifier Ventures and of Tandem NSI, a nonprofit. And what is the nature of the types of companies? I mean, when you think of Silicon Valley, well, it's silicon.
Well, ICs. More.
Now it's software. Mm-hmm. What do we feature here? Biotech?
Well, we have a very strong biotech and software sector. One of the things that we found really interesting when we drilled down the data, I mentioned earlier there were 6,000 M&A deals. What's fascinating about our market is that when our companies are bought, our software biotech companies are bought, they tend to be purchased by out-of-region buyers at roughly the same rate that our own companies buy software and biotech companies from out-of-region. It's almost as if our two markets cross in the middle of the night. It's really profound, which leads us to maybe the biggest recommendation and conclusion of a report, which is if we really want to grow our innovation community and take our place as a leader, recognized national leader, our local businesses should be focusing much more strongly on growing startups and their image here. That is what Silicon Valley does well. Facebook and Google and so forth foster ecosystems of startups around them. You see the same thing up in Boston. We need to focus more on that in areas where we have concentrated expertise, like you mentioned software, certainly cybersecurity, man-machine interface, big data are areas, precision medicine, genomics, biotech, another big area. And frankly, we need to satisfy and be really focusing on the national security establishment, because a lot of the people that do make money as entrepreneurs in this town do it by serving the government customer. The government spent $30 billion last year on information technology. A lot of the people that are entrepreneurs service that. So we have within our grasp the ability to define ourselves as a region that's excellent and as a region that takes advantage of what we have available. We're not a company town, but we are a town that benefits from proximity to Washington, D.C., and we should not apologize for that.
And where do you think this is all going to be heading in the next 5 years, say?
I think it will really depend upon what we as a community decide to do. What we have seen over the last 30 years is that our entrepreneurial class will do a very, very good job of being fast followers to industrial waves. For example, back in the late 90s, this region was the center of the internet boom. More recently, this region has been the center of cybersecurity and healthcare, particularly healthcare IT. The challenge for our region is that as new technologies are financed and developed by federal R&D and industrial R&D, which happens here in our region, things like man-machine interface, artificial intelligence, space, material science, life extension, DNA as a storage vehicle for software, all these things are going to happen. They're already happening. We either are leaders, and if we're leaders, then we benefit from higher paying jobs, or we're fast followers. And what we see in the world these days is that if you are a fast follower, you find that you're competing for less desirable jobs and you're competing for the less desirable outcomes, because technology, as it gets more efficient, rewards what we call in the industry first movers. And first movers get monopoly profits because they're there first. If we as a region do not organize ourselves to make intelligent investments to be leaders, and we continue to be fast followers, we ultimately will fall behind.
And what about the future of these traditional systems integrators who used to be the big engines powering the economy locally and also the big federal contracting dollar suckers upper?
Well, the federal acquisition rules are always going to provide a barrier to entry for companies that just want to serve the government. The other thing is that the government market as it exists is not as large a market as a commercial market. So there will always be needs for niche players to service the federal government qua federal government. What you're asking me, though, is a different question, which is ultimately technology the same game that it was 20 years ago or 10 years ago? And the answer is that what we see more and more is that the tools of technology, particularly in software, have been atomized into smaller and smaller, cheaper bits. The software in the cloud phenomenon, for example, the idea that a couple of guys and a gal and a bunch of Red Bull can invent a new technology company. And the answer is that in the world of software, they can. The integrators are going to find themselves more and more challenged by this democratization of technology, which again leads me to why we have to be leaders, because when new industries come about, whatever they may be, if you have the expertise to deploy those technologies, you command monopoly profits and you can continue to drive high-value jobs. The government contracting integration community will always exist in some form because the federal government needs people to know how to do business with them. The real question is, how do we take advantage of the $56 billion a year of innovation spending in our region and make sure that when the federal government looks for technology leadership, it doesn't go to Silicon Valley, and to make sure that the federal R&D that creates new technologies is commercialized here and not elsewhere.
Well, hopefully it's not too late for that. And what happens to the report next?
Well, the report is out, and it will hopefully be the catalyst for many conversations, already has been. Our recommendations are very clear. This region needs to have a collective organization, consortium, or other driven by the business community to tightly integrate startups with larger companies. We need to have an effort to get technology out of the FFRDC's industry and the federal labs, and we need to educate our workforce how to be more nimble and entrepreneurial and understand technology, both in a secondary level and at their universities. The recommendations are clear. We're there to help. I'm hoping that the business community will grab hold of this thing and run with it.
Jonathan Aberman is chairman of Amplifier Ventures and lead researcher on behalf of the 2030 Group. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, as always, Tom.
Find a link to that report and also share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.